Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Well, we are excited to get started on what we have termed our deliberate practice series. In this podcast, I'm going to be joined by Andy Ryland, who is our senior manager of training and education at USA Football. If you follow Andy on Twitter, it's, I believe, USA Football MT. You'll see that he talks quite a bit about skills, techniques, and the coaching behind it. And that's what we're going to talk about here. Football is steeped in tradition, and a lot of times what becomes popular gets adopted by everybody. It becomes a little bit of a copy and paste type of coaching. Some of those things are really good, but what we want to bring to the forefront here is that as a coach, even if you find something great out there that you like, you really need to think about how is this training your athletes and where does this particular tool belong in your teaching and in your coaching process. And so, Andy, thank you for joining me. I know this is going to be an exciting series. You and I have been talking about this for weeks and putting together ideas. I think it's something that is valuable right now in the season and can give coaches a lot of ideas. So thanks for doing this with us.
No doubt, Keith. Thanks for having me. Like you said, we've gone back and forth a lot on this topic and how we can design better drills. So I'm fired up for this because I think it's such an important topic right now. Every coach talks about the lack of time. So one of the key ways we can minimize that is by making drills that have the most possible carryover. And I think it'll maybe make some guys have some thought process on what they're currently doing and hopefully give you some new ideas on some stuff to add to practice.
And what we're going to do here as far as a format goes over the next 15 weeks here, we're going to take this all the way to what would be the end or the state championships for those teams who play on. We'll be certain to address some things too and help those coaches who, as the year progresses, maybe have to pack up the gear at some point. And we'll talk about some things that you can start looking at for incorporating in your off-season training as well. But as we approach this, we're going to theme each week. We're going to talk about some things that are relevant to that particular time of the year, that particular week of the year. And then we're going to focus on examples and application on offense, defense, and special teams. And we'll get into drills that are either individual drills, position drills. Sometimes we'll talk about group drills. We might even get into some of the team aspects of coaching and drilling your players on the field. So to get this started, we're going to take a look at week one here. And the theme being, we want to dial in. We've spent all camp kind of putting in everything. We start to see what works really well for this team. We're trying to figure out what can we hang our hat on. And it's a time where we want to focus on our specific strengths, especially going into week one. So we want to add some crucial details to the practice plan in order to keep players from being exposed on game day. I think that's the big concern, is that if you don't have these guys ready and dialed into, here's what's going to happen on game day, there's the opportunity that week one isn't going to go exactly as you planned.
100%. It's about, you know, us dialing it in. You know, people say sharpen the sword, but we've got that general framework down. Hopefully we've identified some things that we do really well and are going to be core staples for us. So how do we start training those in the most realistic environments to get ready for the competitive season? And so that those things that we want to be as a team, we are really sharp and we know we can do it in any situation versus any look, especially that first week, because not only do you not always know what the other team is going to do, but early in the season, teams love to throw a couple wrinkles at you. So you're going to get a couple things you don't expect, the trick play, the wacky formation, and just dialing in who we are and making sure those staples are ready.
Andy, this idea kind of goes hand in hand with something you were on Twitter about last week. And in particular, there was someone who had made a comment that the Raiders needed to work on some things with counter. And then it showed, you know, a really, real brief video clip of a very rudimentary drill to essentially fit against blockers in the counter. And there were a lot of things missing with it. And your biggest point was, let's not get seduced by the logo on the helmet, that this is always the best way to do it. And that's what really we're talking about here, is that we want coaches to think not just about the drills we're talking about, but look at the process that we're going through and some of the key things we're talking about that you could put into these drills that are going to help you. So while we might talk today, we're going to talk, for example, about routes on air. We're going to talk about, in particular, maybe four verticals as an example, and how you drill some of those things. And maybe you don't run that, or maybe it's not a big staple in what you do, but there's going to be some application in what we're talking about in the example that you can apply to whatever drills, whatever schemes that you might use.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge coaches often face is that we look at things with a reductionist mentality in order to try to control the reps, but then we take away some of the variables that are important within the players themselves, within the play. And so I've always found it really useful to start thinking about from the player's perspective, what are they facing? Yes, they have an initial read, but what other areas are there that they're picking up information from that could change their course, their route, or their execution of that play? And the more we can layer those continuing variables and continuing reads past initial into our drills, the more likely they'll be ready for game situation.
So let's dig into this, and let's start on the offensive side of the ball. And in particular, we're going to talk about, you know, something that is very popular, I think, from the youth level all the way up, is routes on air. Number one, I want to clarify that I am not saying you should never run routes on air. Again, it's a tool that I think does have its time and place. I do think you need to consider how long you do it for, because there are so many things that, and variables, as you mentioned, that happen along the way on our routes that really change the timing and windows of the play. And it may be ever so slightly, but we talk about it all the time. This is a game of inches. So we want to have those details in place for our players as well, because ultimately it makes them successful. So while we may spend a couple days, or while we may spend our initial introduction of a route concept doing routes on air, we really need to think about, what do we need to add to this drill to make it more dynamic, to make it more game-like, and to simulate exactly what players may see on game day. When I think about, why don't we just scrimmage all the time? Well, there's so many moving parts in the scrimmage that it's hard to really even get into some of the detailed coaching you need to. It's hard to work on some certain points. So we do take pieces out and create these scenarios where we're working on one particular aspect of that. But as we go on through the season, as we need to be more efficient with our time, we have to find out ways to put more into those drills. So we'll take routes on air as an example. And, you know, understanding beyond how those lines are drawn on a diagram is critical to the success of that play. So drills like routes on air need components added to make the repetitions feel more game-like and to develop the windows and timing that are more realistic to how it happens on game day. And routes on air is something I used for sure. Four verts were a big part of what we were doing. Four verts seem simple. You're going to run down the field. You're going to catch the ball on your landmark and make a big play. And the quarterback has his general windows that where he's going to throw that in, whether it's on the inside or the outside. However, the defense is out there trying to do things to stop us. If we start out on the edge, for example, we may get a press corner who's going to try to jam and disrupt us and do everything he can to screw up the timing or to take away that receiver in the quarterback's progression. On the inside, we may be seeing a one-high defense, but you can bet that even in a one-high defense, they're not just going to let us run down the seam. There's going to be a collision or a collision and carry. There's going to be something that happens which our receivers cannot just use the mentality that they developed in routes on air to win. So this is where you have to start layering in the details. And for us, this actually would go back to something before we began routes on air, is we would just work on, for example, our inside receivers on defeating that alley defender, defeating that guy who maybe it is a collision and carry for him, or maybe he's going to collision before he gets to the flat in a cover four. But he's going to do something to impede our route and, like I said, mess up the timing. So we would just create a drill. A lot of times, you know, this would be installed in spring, but it certainly would carry over to fall camp, and we'd use it throughout the season where we'd have somebody out there when it was without pads, just with a shield. Even when we did have pads on, just to avoid some of that contact with hard shells, we're using the pads. And the idea is we're going to stress that defender on the way to getting to our landmark. And for us, it had two particular coaching points as far as what that defender could do. And for us, you know, at BW, we called it hard shoulder and soft shoulder. It's something that our receivers coach, he's retired now, but a great guy, Ray Raddick, put together that terminology. And then we carried it over when he left with our other receivers coach, Jamie Fleming, who now is a high school coach at Berea Mid-Park here in Ohio, but still using some of these same things. The hard shoulder essentially means that that defender turns and opens and is going to do something to try to collision us. And so what we're doing in this drill, we haven't put it into routes on air yet, we're just working on the release portion, is that we want to work to that shoulder that's open now to the field, work him upfield to the point where now he has to turn his hips to be able to stay on that course to collision us. And as soon as he turns his hips, we're going to make sure that distance is closed, and then we're cutting butt side. So now where that guy was trying to collision, to knock us out of our landmark, to keep us off from that four-vert landmark and close up those windows, make it easier for safety to get over, we've stressed him to the point now we can rip underneath him. We always wanted that to be a one-hand hit, because if we did something with two, we would end up checking our feet. So we want to stay on the run, rip through, and be on that landmark. And so that drill was taught really before we put it into, you know, our combination. Sometimes we go half field combination. Sometimes it'd be the full field. Sometimes it's just the middle guys. But before we got into those routes then, progressing on from routes in air, we would work that drill. Then that drill would be inserted into our routes on air. So we would take that guy. He would go out, and he would be the defender. It might be, you know, that next guy in line or the last guy in line goes out, grabs that pad, and serves as that defender to make him make a choice. The other option he has is what we call the soft shoulder, meaning that the shoulder never turned. It stays down. Maybe there was some kind of a attraction to play action or something that keeps that guy frozen there. And essentially, he's giving us that alley. So we take it. We really don't have to do anything to avoid a collision there. We just need to get on top of that guy right now and win the space on top of him. So we wanted to make sure that we would see that as well, because we didn't want our guy to freeze thinking, all right, is he coming? Is he not? If the shoulders would stay square to the line of scrimmage, we knew that we could take that landmark right away. So really, there's two decisions he had to make. And in that progression, though, we always wanted to install one decision at a time, meaning we weren't initially to that point where you have to decide, is that what we termed a hard shoulder, and now you're going to have to close the distance, cut butt side, or soft shoulder where you can just take the landmark right now. We would install those separately. He would see those kind of reactions from the defense, understand the technique he needs, and then execute it. So that's one portion then that we would add to that routes on air. Now, if you're seeing cover four, which we would a lot, you're going to have to take a look then at the safety who's over top that defender, the level three defender. And there's going to have to be a decision made there as well. So we would install that portion of it outside of routes on air. Sometimes we would use that first level two decision. Sometimes we would not. We'd just work on that part of it. But now that's another component that inside receiver has to understand. Did the safety stay on that landmark? And is he playing a quarters concept or a half field concept on your landmark? Does he get off and go over the top of the outside route? Is it a cover two? Can you bend it in? Do you need to stay on your landmark? Do you need to break it off to a dig? All those things really became part of at least one of our receivers' decision-making process. And so we wanted to drill that as well. So we go back and we take it to a routes on air where you're running against nothing and you're running a line. these decisions are not happening in Routes on Air. We're missing a lot of the process. We have to install that as well. And in coaching this and keeping it moving, yes, you're going to have to add more components. You probably could get through more if you just went Routes on Air and fired right away. But it's critical that these guys understand the windows. And the quarterbacks need to see it as well. It really affects their progression and how they work through things. So that's one particular example of the Routes on Air. So when we take a look at what we're doing with the inside receiver, we can start with the Routes on Air. We can practice those decisions in isolation, working on just the decision-making portion. And then we can start to put together back that drill, which originally has the setup of a Routes on Air, but now has some defender keys within the drill in which our players have to operate and make their decisions. And when it's fully installed, for an inside receiver, for example, on four verticals, he's making his decision on level two, and then he's making his decision on level three based on what he needs to do first to defend or defeat that alley player and find a release into his route to continue on his stem without getting knocked off the timing or out of the window, and then make a decision on what he's going to do against that safety who has either spun to the middle of the field, sits on his landmark either inside or out, or has disappeared off his landmark either down or to the outside. So there's so many variations we can work. The Routes on Air really needs to reflect what's happening week to week in your game plan and knowing what the defense is going to do. So some of these can be standard and you can work every week, because I do think there's that cumulative effect of reps over the course of the season. So even though you might not see, for example, a fire zone where that defender is buzzing down from the safety spot and the alley defender disappears on a blitz, and now you have to defeat that guy on the move, while you might not see that, it could be worthwhile to continue to work that throughout the season. So with that in mind, though, I think the other important part of this and the way to make this work is the language that you associate with it. In the military, they call this brevity code. And the idea is that you are able to communicate a lot of meaning within a word or a phrase. And so as I look at that in this particular instance and how we're training that inside receiver on four verticals, here's some of the language that we would use. And as a coach, I would install this in my playbook. I would install it on videos that I put together on Huddle where I have these call-outs popping up so guys understand this is exactly what I mean when I say, for example, pre-snap. So pre-snap would be one. When I say pre-snap to that guy, I'm reminding him to identify the player that he needs to release. And again, I'm talking to the inside receiver, in this case on four verts. On the snap would be another one. He wants to close the distance. Step on his toes would be another one. If it's a soft shoulder, take what's there is the coaching point. Keep moving. We don't want a situation where they check their feet. So keep moving lets them know to stay on the move. Don't check your feet. Don't stop to release that guy because it takes you out of the window. It takes you off the quarterback's decision-making process and he moves on. Get small. We talk to our players. I didn't mention this, but as we're making that release, we want to provide just a shoulder for him to hit. So you think about if I give him my chest, I probably have about an 18-inch surface. If I give him my shoulder, it's six. And now his chance to knock me off of my course becomes a lot less. So get small is a coaching point that I can constantly be reminding them of. High then low. We talked about how we want to stress that hard shoulder and then cut butt side. One hand. You know, we want a one hand hit. We don't want to have two hands because two hands a lot of times is going to put our hips in a bad position to get back on our track and usually will lead, especially in our younger receivers, to them having to check their feet to make that move. And then the other key point we make or buzzword we use is eyes onward. So after releasing that defender, your eyes have to go to the next defender key if you have one or to the quarterback looking for the ball. So brevity code, buzzwords, coaching points. I know we talk a lot about in the high tempo offense that there's things you have to coach on film. But if you're using that brevity code and you're giving those buzzwords, those will have a lot of meaning, even though it's one or two words that you're giving most of the time. It'll have a lot of meaning to your players, and they can make corrections on the fly. There should be all that kind of talking going on. So, Andy, that's one idea of how you take something like Routes on Air, and over the course of your camp, end of the season, you add a lot more detail to it that now you really have some efficiency that you're getting so much out of those reps in terms of what your players need to do to be successful on game day.
Keith, man, spot on with that. And I think the thing you said earlier that really jumped out to me was taking it from a line on a piece of paper, especially with four verticals. You know, we see a straight line just drawn on a piece of paper, but the bend, maybe the little bit of wiggle to set up the defender, the cut off the butt side, there's so much more to it than just a straight line on a piece of paper. That's the intricacies of the game. That's what makes a really great receiver. That's what makes a playmaker. You know, sometimes people call it football IQ and the ability to understand concepts and set things up. But I think you can train those things when you structure really sound drills like you just outlined. And so I want to look at it from a defensive point of view, a similar situation where we have a lot of straight lines drawn on a piece of paper, and that's going to be in our stunt and our blitz game. That stunt and blitz is a straight line on a piece of paper maybe, but there's a lot of vision, decision, action that happens, a lot of reaction that happens within those things. And early in camp, maybe even through the season, it's really common to see a lot of guys going through their stunt and blitz work on trash cans. And I think, you know, there's no bad tool. It has a purpose. To me, that trash can is just coaches doing a knowledge check. Do our guys know the initial responsibility? But I'm not so sure it's going to help you in the dynamics of play. So I'm really big on we need to get this period versus a moving opponent. And this can be a non-contact period. You know, it can be the second team defense. It could be a scout team. It can be any six guys you can wrangle up. But I think those gaps need to move. The example I always use when I'm clinicking or talking about this is you imagine like that old big wide zone run, right? We're really just hitting hard on that outside zone. Those guys are turning. They're moving down the line. They're just looking for an edge. They're just hoping one of our five offensive linemen gets a reach block, and we're going to read it and cut off that. So when those guys start taking off, that gap moves dramatically. And if we envision a backer who's in the box and say he's blitzing B gap, well, if the zone goes to my side, if I ran a straight line, I may end up in the backside A by the time those linemen finish moving. So I need to think about how do I change my angle? How do I react to that offense? And how do I maintain gap integrity within those blitzes and stunts? So I look at us and say, okay, if we're going to do all of our blitzes and all of our stunts during that early practice versus moving opponents. So whether it's the most challenging situation to try to overload the system or whether it's the plays you think you're going to see that particular week, I think you want to make sure you hit those gaps and hit those blitzes and stunts via those situations. And I'll paint a couple pictures for you real quick. And one is, like we talked about, that backer who's blitzing the B gap. Well, if he gets big wide zone, he's going to have to really change that course to the outside to maintain gap integrity. If he gets zone the other way, he's going to have to make sure he stays in phase with his defensive lineman. And that's a term I use, but if you think about it, when that defensive line stunts, now he's getting pressure from the backside being pushed by the lineman opposite him who's trying to wash him. Well, I have to stay in phase with him because if I just run straight and try to take on the next blocker, as he moves away and I stay stationary hooked on a block, now that gap gets really big. So even though I'm, quote, in the gap, if the gap's 10 yards wide, the running back's going to run through it anyway. So I have to stay connected. I have to stay in phase. So getting our second and third level players working with each other and with the D line is going to be really, really important. Pin and pull is another common scheme which causes a lot of issues because we could think about our stunting defensive lineman might very easily beat the down block, but if he's stunting inside and we get a wide attacking play, he may not be able to redirect to make that play. So we'll go ahead and X him out of the situation. Now think about those blitzing second and third level players. When we get pin and pull, our offensive line players have changed. So now the down block, we'll say it's the offensive tackle. He's now the inside most gap on my side of the center. And then the guy who pulls out, my guard, for instance, Now he's the outside. So in theory, I still have an A, a B, and a C gap, but our players have swap responsibilities. Well, how are you going to play that as a defensive coach? Or do you still want him to hit the gap via first guy, second guy, third guy? Or are you asking him to sit specifically off the guard? And these are things I think you need to work through. But most importantly, these are things your player needs to know before the first game. So we're not on the sideline trying to make that adjustment going, well, if they pin and pull, or if they insert the sniffer, or if we get wide zone, I need you to adjust this course and I need you to work that. The other area that I think becomes really important is block defeat. So easiest example, we'll look at a defensive end, or we'll test five technique, outside shade of the tackle, whatever position that is in your defense, and we're going to put him into the B gap, whatever you call that in your defense. Well, as he stunts into that gap, if that guard goes down, he's got to look at that chase technique. You know, how tight is he going to stay? Is he working down the line? Are you teaching him to pry back upfield based on the play call or your particular defense? If he gets action towards him, we've typically called it a ricochet technique, but now I need to engage that guard and get upfield. But also, what that defensive end really needs reps at is the different angles that those guards and centers are coming out towards him at. You think about that wide zone example. If he gets a huge wide zone, how many times have we seen a defensive end work into the B gap, get wide action towards him, and that guard ends up actually getting the reach block on him, and we lose gap integrity. So he needs to be able to not just know the technique to defeat the block, but to defeat it versus tight action, defeat it versus wide action, defeat it versus maybe vertical action, like on a real tight inside zone, and also action away where he's playing that crash technique. I think a lot of times we count on our group periods, like inside run or a blitz period, you know, in passing situations where we're working stunts, and our team period to work on that kind of technique or that kind of read and reaction. I'm of the belief that if we structured our pre-practice, our walkthroughs, our individual, that our drills were representative of the true reads, reactions, and decisions that the players will make, they'll be better prepared when they go into that group period, which allows us to get better with potentially less reps, less time on the field, but also as much as we're training the physical skills, we're training that psychological decision-making football smart part that I don't know if coaches spend enough time really considering. Are we training vision, decision, action? Are we always training best case scenario? Or are we training the situation where this guy's going to have to make a read at full speed versus an uncertain opponent where we think we're going to get a lot of gap scheme, and all of a sudden they come out in this first game of the year and they're giving us some zone looks? So mixing in those looks keeps our guys honest. It keeps us progressing in our skills. And as much as we want specificity towards the week we're playing, we also want to make sure we're developing well-rounded skills. So transitioning trash cans to moving targets, like I said, non-contact, but moving at speed, I think will really dial in that blitz stunt game and make sure that your gap integrity and your fits are always rock solid.
Definitely, Andy. And I think about just the tools we have. And I know, you know, again, that knowledge, that understanding, we need to see that from our players. You and I have talked about this several times, you know, just taking something like Go Army Edge and creating those different blocking schemes and projecting them on the wall and using that maybe as your walkthrough period, or as, you know, in 15 minutes, you could really get a ton of reps and looks at those things just to see, get your guys used to seeing those moving gaps, that the gaps are going to move in front of them, I think is a valuable tool. And, you know, I had the defensive coordinator from University of Virginia Wise on last week, and, you know, top 25 defense. Shapp's always done a great job, but he really made the point that, you know, there are all those things we need to work with our players. So when we have to think about how much can we actually load them up with and get practice and make them good at. And, you know, as I'm hearing you talking about all the different scenarios and how those gaps might change in the movement, that we have a significant amount of things on their plate that we're going to have to, you know, get those reps cumulatively over the course of the season in order to make something good. And in week one, we're talking about dial it in, that we probably got to make some decisions. How much can we handle and get good at on the move with the vision, decision, action process in place properly so that these guys are successful in week one Friday night?
I think that's key. And I think that's why we titled this week Dial It In. Is that over the course of, you know, your preseason, hopefully you and your staff have identified some things that you think your team is doing really well. Well, let's take those things, like we said, let's double down and let's say, okay, let's make sure we can do this versus a bunch of different formations, versus a bunch of different looks, versus a bunch of different actions, and our guys are prepared for all of the reads, the reactions, and then the checks and the rereads and the re-reactions so that we go in with a really solid game plan. And I think that's key in week one, to your point. Let's do what we do well, and let's make sure what we do well we can do in all situations.
And I know, Andy, you also put together that brevity code, those buzzwords, those coaching points for this particular set of skills or techniques, decisions that you're needing to make. Go ahead and review some of those, at least, you know, at the very least, to give coaches some ideas of some of the language they can create and add to some of their drills.
Yeah, well, I think like all football offense or defense, it starts pre-snap. You know, we have to identify the formation, identify our gap assignment. You know, what's our initial departure angle going to be? So I need to hit this gap. What's that path going to look like? On the snap, obviously we're blitzing for a reason. We want to close the space. You know, we say we want to beat it with speed. My coach always told me, you don't want to wrestle with the bear. If we can beat the offensive lineman with speed, let's go ahead and do it. We want to take away space because space takes away time. The key, too, is to be able to read on the run. I think linebackers, defensive linemen have to hear read on the run a lot. As they're moving, they're going to have to look at what's the next threat, who's the next blocker, and is that gap moving? What's my reaction? Our guys are going to have to bend the course. So we talk about initial departure angle, but then we're going to have to bend that line to be able to stay with a moving B-gap or to stay with a down-blocking player across from us. So initial departure angle goes to bend the course. You got to find the threat. So as we're coming through those gaps, what's the blocking scheme? I.e., if the guard is blocking out, he's the player that I'm going to have to take on, engage, and beat. If the guard blocks down and the tackle is also blocking down, now I have to be able to beat the blocker. I have to be able to beat the tackle as the potential blocker, using my backer in the B gap example. So find the threat so we can use the right block defeat in order to engage. Then obviously we need to use a block defeat technique, and there's going to be a decision there. Am I going to rip and run through penetration? You know, maybe I'm an arm over guy. What sort of pass rush moves or what sort of arsenal do your players have? We also have to be prepared to stun a blocker and play strong in the hole. So there's times where the offense gets a good play call on us, and that offensive lineman is going to beat us to the gap. He's going to be square in the gap waiting for us. And if I just try to dip and rip and run, he's probably going to wash me. So can I stun it, be strong, still win to my gap responsibility side, but use multiple techniques to defeat the blocker? And the final one is find the ball. You know, the objective is always the ball carrier. The blockers are just obstructions. They just get in the way. Obviously, we have to get our eyes to them. We have to handle them appropriately. But whether it's bending the course or whether it's defeating the block, the ultimate objective, find the ball and go make the play. So pre-snap, on the snap, read on the run, bend the course, find the threat, block defeat, find the ball. And to your point, I like the brevity code so much because you can coach a lot in two or three words, which allows us to not have to go to the film. We can make adjustments on field, but we may not need to, you know, stop and do a big lecture on what was supposed to happen. you can hit them with a key phrase, and we can go about our business getting them some quality reps.
We've talked about the offensive side of the ball. We've talked about the defensive side of the ball. We have to give that third phase some attention here. And this week, we're focusing on the punt cover and thinking about different ways we can practice that. And, you know, if you go back to when you played in high school, Andy, I'm sure you remember this. Our special teams was essentially getting out there and running full 11-on-11 drills to get this done. And really, we need to think of special teams just like we do any other scheme or position on the field. We want to break that down and take some individual time. And I think, let's say we have 10 minutes set aside to do punt and punt cover, that maybe we want to spend 5 minutes repping the individual techniques and then putting it together at the end. So today we've kind of focused on those cover guys after the kick and reacting in space, because, you know, ultimately we work those drills a lot of times. Again, you might go down the lane, you might do some of this on air to make sure everybody's there, but there's going to be things that happen along the way. Those spaces are going to change. What right now might be a 5 yards on one side and 5 yards on the other might be the responsibility I have to cover as we converge on a receiver, on a punt returner. Somebody might get picked off and blocked, and now I might have a 10-foot gap on that side or 10-yard gap on that side to cover. So we want to, just like on defense, keep that integrity of the coverage and deal with bigger lanes. Andy, what kind of ideas do you have to set up that VDA, vision decision action process for covering punts?
Yeah, you used the term right there for me, but the guys get picked off. It's part of special teams, and we need to be prepared for it. So kind of our picked off drill is we want to work with three players, you know, by position. It can be the guys that are going to fill lanes next to each other. We'll obviously want our wings and tight ends, you know, working out more outside on the field, and our middle guys working in the middle of the field. But we set up a drill where we have three cover guys, and then we place one blocker normally around 10 yards away from them, and then the returner maybe 10 yards behind him. So we're looking at about 20-yard space. We're mimicking some special teams coverage, but we're definitely not chasing a 40-yard punt downfield, trying to save the legs, trying to do all those things. So on the coach's go call, our three cover guys are going to engage in their coverage downfield. We pretended like they've already made their block. The ball's already been kicked. Now, our blocker is actually going to come forward, and he's going to choose randomly. Coach can assign it, or we can just let the players choose it on their own to really mix it up, really challenge decision-making. We never know what's going to happen, and he's going to block one of those guys. Now, I like to do this as a non-collision drill because this is about coverage lanes. It's not about block defeat. So whichever of our cover guys our blocker picks off, that guy's just going to stop. He's out of the drill, which means now we have two cover guys to fill three lanes. Now, that's very realistic. You think about, somebody's going to get hung up on the line of scrimmage. Somebody's going to get caught up in the wash of the punt block, and he's not going to get out quickly enough. So now those two cover guys are going to have to see where is the open space, and we're going to have to start bending our lanes a little bit to bias that space and take up out of the space. So again, if we pick off the guy, we'll say on the far right, now my middle and left guy, if they see that opening, they're going to have to bias that. They're going to have to know that there is a big gap there, and I can't let that returner just run through that gap. So I'm going to need to lean my coverage lane that way until I see those guys start reengaging. Now, do we want them to run all the way in and fill up the other player's lane? No, we don't, because we're expecting that guy to get off the block at some point and come add to the party late. But I want to lean that way, so if the receiver tries to shoot that gap, I'm at least in a position to squeeze it down and make the play. If he picks off the middle player, now our two outside guys have to realize there is a huge hole between us. As they start to see the space between them, they're going to have to realize, can I make a tackle if this guy steps on the gas and hits it right up through that hole? If I can't, I'm, again, may need to lean my lane just a couple yards, right? Not enough to throw off our whole defensive spacing, but lean inside enough that if he hits the middle, I can make the play. Repeat the same process on the left. left guy's gone. We have to lean our lanes that way. One of the reasons I really like this drill is because with the randomness of not knowing which way or who the blocker is going to pick off and not knowing where the ball carrier is going to go, because we give him some freedom. He could try to run outside, or he could try to run through the middle, or he could try to run inside. Obviously, we'll have a drill space marked off, so he can't run all the way across the field. But within that drill space, he has complete freedom to try to win. And I think that's really important. We talk a lot about competitive tag, where we always want our offensive players to try to win, so the defense gets a, or special teams player gets a realistic look of what it's going to look like. Now we're fitting gaps. Not only will this teach the guys about leaning towards the lanes, but there'll also be a lot of self-discovery about each player. You know, how far can I really cover? I'm not as fast as the guy next to me. I might need to split the difference and cheat a little farther than a really quick guy who won't need to cheat as far. That self-discovery and understanding one's abilities only comes to fruition if we're getting a full-speed look by a fast, quick athlete that's really going to mimic what we suppose the opponent's returner is going to be capable of. We expect him to be a fast, quick guy. So now in the game situation, when these guys get picked off, when somebody trips and falls down during the punt rush or the escape, we're fine. We can fill the lanes with six. We can fill the lanes with five. We can fill the lanes as needed and still find a good spread, quality relationships between the players next to me. Just like I talked about on the defensive side, our ability to be in phase with the players next to us is going to provide that nice solid net that we need. So it's a fun drill. It adds some dynamics.
Wendy, I do think it becomes a fun drill. It's definitely a lot more fun than running down the field and covering punts, you know, 40 yards down the field, five or seven times in a 10-minute period. And it breaks down that skill in a way that we get more reps out of it. We get our players to understand exactly what we're trying to accomplish. And we can put it back together in the end on some of those reps that we get. Throughout this segment, I did hear you kind of bring in those buzzwords, the brevity code, that's going to help communicate with your players what they're doing. You know, we certainly don't want to be on the field giving dissertations on what you did right or wrong, but we want words to create meaning. And you shared some of those. I'll let you go ahead and review them.
Yeah, so obviously we bring in some stuff from earlier in the punt, so release and run. Once our guys disengage the block, release and run, and that's going to start the drill. You know, I talk about we want to bend that course, and for me, that just talks about us altering our initial line of run. We want to lean the lane, and that's a bit conceptual, but it's going to be us slightly cheating towards the lane that has been vacated. So bend is the individual player action of changing his line. Lean the lane is us defensively thinking, I'm going to cheat my aim point, my landmark, to make sure I'm covering that spot. You heard me say it about blitzes and stunts, and I'll say it here on defensive special teams. We have to be in phase. In phase to me means we are connected to our teammates. We want to be connected both left and right. We also want to be connected horizontally on the field. If we get too far apart, either in spacing or if we get gaps in our coverage because of speed differences, we create seams to run through. So we want to be in phase and connected. And then finally, any defensive play where we're going to make a tackle, we have to be able to transition from that high hip sprint mechanics covering down the field into our power position. So we're going to come to balance. We're going to reestablish that base. We're going to reestablish that low hip level. So we're going to come to balance out of that sprint and be prepared for the contact situations. So when executing the pickoff drill, we're looking at release and run, bend, lean the lane, stay in phase, and then come to balance.
Great coaching points there. And again, you know, as we look at all these things, it really is about figuring out what we can do to be more efficient and to get more out of our drills. It has to be built progressively. You know, while I said, the value of routes on air is limited, I can't just jump into these decisions right away. I have to build to it. So with anything, as you install something, you're going to build to it. You're going to use all these tools. And we gave you some examples on offense, defense, and special teams. And again, focusing on creating that brevity language, something that defensive coordinator at Nebraska, Eric Shenander, and I talked about specifically on his podcast. When you want to coach in a tempo situation, which most of us do want today, we have to have that brevity code, and there has to be a lot of meaning carried in those words. So teach it to your players, install it in what you do, make it part of it. And obviously what we want to do here in week one is dial in. So hopefully some of these ideas help you dial into week one. Andy and I are going to be back next week. We're going to focus on growth. A lot of coaches say the biggest growth you have is between one and two. And we're going to focus on some things we can do to help augment that growth between weeks one and two. Andy can always be reached on Twitter. I'll let him share his Twitter handle here in a second. For this topic, we would love for you to share some thoughts, ideas, add to this. If you would, please use the hashtag deliberate practice, and we'll continue this thread throughout the season. Andy, go ahead and share your Twitter.
You were spot on in the beginning again. I am USA Football MP.
Mine is at Coach K Grabowski. Also take a look at following our other Twitter handle, which is Football Dev Coach. So it's at FBDEV Coach, and our new website, footballdevelopment.com, where you'll be able to take a look at our contact system. Andy, as always, it's great to talk ball with you here. Great ideas on coaching. I hope we spurred some thought out there for other coaches. And like I said, best of luck in week one.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.